9. I played K9 in Sarah Jane Adventures. You are listening to Women Talk. We check talk sci-fi.
Hi, this is Jerry Donaldson.
And this is Eugenia Stapiro.
And welcome back.
You're listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
But you know that already. That's what you told me last time.
and the time before that.
We do that because you've already got to this point and it's lots of promos at the beginning. But what are we going to talk about in this episode?
Oh, look, this is amazing because it's about I Dream of Jeannie and about magic.
In general, and fantasy in particular, I suppose. We talk a lot about sci-fi, science fiction, and this time we're probably talking more specifically about fantasy instead of sci-fi. Although, to me, it's all science fiction, because if there's no magic, it's obviously against science, and therefore it's fictional and science fiction.
But I have a different theory about that.
You do, do you?
I do, because fantasy is based in a world where it can't really happen. Science fiction, for me, there is still a possibility that it can happen.
Well, you never know. One day someone might discover magic.
Well, you never know.
Yes, and may have been there all those years ago. Well, look at those druids.
Oh, well, that's true.
So who knows?
But the thing is, I met one of my idols and dribbled and was a mess and couldn't get the first question out at all.
As you've heard, this one is about I Dream of Jeannie, and we were very, very lucky through Supernova Expo to be offered the opportunity to interview the main cast, the three characters from I Dream of Jeannie.
I know.
And, of course, that's Barbara Eden, that's Larry Hagman and Bill Daly. Now, in this podcast, we're going to have two of those people because Bill Daly is an amazing man and his interview is too long for this podcast. That will have to be on its own at another time. But we've interviewed, as you know, quite a lot of people along the way. So we're fairly experienced of meeting some of the people that we've seen on television. And, you know, whilst we're excited, we can basically handle the meeting. However,
Not this time.
We get up to do the interview. Thank you very much, Lionel and Daniel from Supernova. And we get out our stuff and we put our
equipment. It even happened before the interview. The publicist Lionel came up to us and said, oh, who would you like to interview? And we go, oh, you know, whoever.
Everybody.
And he said, well, how about the I Dream of Jeannie people? And I just went, really?
Well, that's true. But as we get up and get our equipment down and we put it down, the next thing that actually happens is out of Eugenia's mouth comes blah.
Complete
which
babble.
We have to leave on the podcast so that you can hear it. She's not allowed to cut it out. And I've said that now, so she's not allowed to cut it out. And I'll say it again later on, so she can't cut it out. And I ended up having to apologise for her, Barbara was very sweet.
That's for sure.
I mean, you met one of your icons in terms of
this is a woman that I've grown up with. Mm. You know, I've known her most of my life. Yes. I Dream of Jeannie was
It's been around 50 years almost?
Well, it was in the 60s, early 60s that it started, and I think it might have even been in the late 50s, I'm not sure, but
it was in the 60s, and we have to say that most of the characters are the people who played those characters are in their 70s and 80s.
That's right. Well, Bill Daly's in his 80s, and I think Barbara and Larry are very close to their 80s and still look very good for their age.
Very good. So when you have known someone, a character that long or... And like, I Dream of Jeannie is still on television today. Reruns are happening constantly. I bet you they didn't have rerun money in those days.
No, exactly.
Mr. Spock that actually happened to get that for everybody. Derek Nimmo. Well, Derek Nimmo is in a different country. Leonard Nimoy was, you know, the principal character in actually getting the image of the person to belong to the actor as opposed to the studio. So I'm sure if Larry, Barbara and Bill were able to get residuals, that would have been a pretty good sum.
Well, it would have, because for a lot of them... Well, Barbara already had been a fairly substantial movie star. Yeah. And being in TV in those days, I mean, only until recently, was seen as a second-rate job, really.
Well, it was. You had movie stars and television stars and never the twain do meet. However, the genres are moving over really... I mean, look at the amount of big TV stars have been in television shows in recent times.
So, yeah, so I Dream a Genie has been around for a very long time. And, you know, who didn't want to have their own private genie and been able to make the wishes?
I wish I did. Or Samantha.
Yes.
From Bewitched. Merlin. I mean, who wouldn't want magic to do what you actually could do?
I wanted so much to be able to wiggle that nose like Samantha and, you know, to be able to just conjure up whatever, and Genie to cross over those hands and blink and... And there you had it.
I suppose, moving on from the bit about the I Dream of Genie crew in terms of magic, the thing about magic in entertainment in terms of that is that it allows the writers to actually write anything they like.
That's it. It's an open door. They can go to any world. They can do anything. It doesn't matter. They can conjure up whatever is in their imagination through magic. There is no limitation at all.
So it's obviously a very good tool along the way. And not only do we have I Dream of Jeannie, we have Samantha, we have Bewitched, we have Sabrina, we have Merlin, we have...
Charmed,
which was full of magic. We have Supernatural, which has got magic in it. I mean, you can mix magic in to lots and lots of different things.
Well, that's it. And even through all H.R. Puffin stuff.
One of my favourite movies was The Raven by Vincent Price, which was actually all about magic. He was a wizard. And I remember that way back when I was young. And magic has been something that has been used constantly and ongoing. Like, the Highlander is even magic, really.
Well, it isn't.
Harry Potter.
And look at Harry Potter. I mean, that's taken the world by storm.
That's true. I mean, and if you want to actually go into books as opposed to sci-fi, there's the Robert Jordan Wheel of Time series, which is all about magic. It's about using, you know, the different powers, spirit-like power, all of those things. But it's about magic.
That's it. And in... From an English point of view, English writing has always had a magic side to it. You know, you have comics, you have children's books.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings.
That's it.
The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
There's a lot of magic mixed up in English literature. There's also in American, but I think more so in...
Well, it goes back further, all the way back to King Arthur and Merlin.
That's it.
So it goes way back to the Middle Ages, in terms of not earlier, that... There is magic around. And if you want to do some research, you can go and read some of those stories in their original form, which are still available around, and read about magic, because magic was thought to be real back in those days.
And it certainly has made the film industry a very profitable place for a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely.
Using magic as a background, and a lot of TV series. You know, even not so much the... fantasy side of things, but even things like Jonathan Creek, where you've got a magician, or the Dresden Files, or, you know, you've got magicians.
I love the Dresden File books. I was really hopeful about the Dresden File television show, but obviously magic wasn't meant to be. I enjoyed the TV series, and I would have liked to have seen it actually build a bit more, because the books are fantastic.
And magic still excites us. I mean, you go to Vegas. I mean, some of the biggest shows in Vegas are magic shows.
David Copperfield. Oh. I don't know how he does some of the things he does. Makes elephants disappear.
Exactly. I think he made an airplane disappear at one stage. All those types of things. We have talent shows, you know, like we have Australians Got Talent and America's Got Talent.
Britain's Got Talent.
And there's magicians on there, and some of them are just amazing what they do. I mean, their whole way that they do things has changed, because they've got to be more upbeat and showy and... compared to the good old card tricks and, you know, the Mandrid the magician. I mean, you've got comic books, you've got all sorts of things. Magic has always played an incredible part in literature and TV and movies. So it's just and with me, I guess, growing up, where Bewitched and I Dream of Genie were stable diets, and the whole Merlin thing was, you know, very much there, that magic was a part of it.
And magic?
Is that what I said?
Magic.
That magic was a part of my life. You just accepted it and...
You accepted that you wanted it and you knew it didn't exist, but
yes.
You would dearly love to be able to do everything by magic.
Who wouldn't want to find a magic lamp and rub it and have three wishes?
Oh, you've got Aladdin, haven't you, all the way back in the 101 Arabian Nights tales and so on. I mean, and Arab history, in terms of its storytelling, has had an amazing amount of magic in it, because you've got magic carpets, you've got the genie, all of those things.
That's
so cultures
right.
around the world have all believed in some shape or form of magic. And if you did the anthropological study of it all, from the Merlins to, you know, the genies in the bottle and the magic carpets and all that, the druids and so on, magic has been very important to a wide group of people. In fact, there's still a religion, the Wiccans today, that actually believe in magic and how that magic can impact us along the way.
That's it. I mean, when Charmed came along and you had that magic book of spells. And
same I wanted with Harry, one of them.
I wanted one of them. And the same with Harry Potter. You know, you've got all the different classes that they went to, that they learnt the spells to do certain things. I mean, who hasn't sat there with a Harry Potter wand and done a couple of spells themselves?
Well.
Well.
There must be some of us.
I know a couple of people that have. But it's there.
I'm not one of them.
Well, upset Mark, yes, sir. You're one of them.
I suppose at one time I maybe have crossed my arms and blinked my eyes.
Oh, I've done that more than once.
Just to see.
Not recently, but you know.
Yes. Well, I Dream of Jeannie was an interesting show for its time. That was still a bit, you know, you've heard us talk about other podcasts along the way, like Voyager and Sanctuary and so, about strong women. This is definitely not a show with a strong woman.
Well, in one way or another. But
no,
she
was,
I mean, no, because they were, she called him master. I mean, she did everything. She was there for his beck and call. And I think every man would have loved his own little genie as well.
Oh, absolutely.
That doesn't take away from the fun of it all, though.
Oh, it doesn't take away from the fun of it all, but it is, I suppose, slightly off its time these days, we have to say that, as was Bewitched. As for some of the other shows.
They were set in a certain era, and that's the way it was portrayed.
And if you look at Charmed compared to I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched, you can see a completely different swing of where we are in the different centuries, almost.
That's it. We have four very powerful women who take on the world. They're the ones that command what happens,
well,
you know.
Not only the world, but the world in the after bits, because they had the, you know, all those other extras, the elders and so on,
that's
that weren't
true.
Actually in this sphere, if you want to say. So it is off its, but it's fun.
That, and that's the thing you have to remember. It's all about fun. It's all about enjoyment. It was a very good comedy show. And the other thing of its time was that it was placed in NASA. Now, the whole space program was very, very new at that time.
It was.
And I can remember as a child watching these people in NASA, I thought it was real. You know, I didn't realise that they hardly knew much about NASA themselves, because NASA was so young. But that doesn't mean that it didn't stop people from dreaming about being involved in the space program. You don't know how many people might have been influenced by something like I Dream of Jeannie, because they want to be out in space, they want to be astronauts. You know, they wanted to be able to work in that sort of area. Just like Star Trek and all those other sci-fi shows, I think this one probably could have led some people to go into that way.
But it was entertaining, and magic is entertaining. I mean, we know that is not real in general terms. So it's definitely of that realm that you can pretend, as opposed to science fiction, as I think as you said earlier, is probable.
Yes.
Magic is, as most of us are aware, excuse me, any of those that you still believe in it, is not possible yet.
Who knows?
Who knows?
We have untapped things in our brain that we don't know what's
maybe
possible.
Maybe in a different parallel world.
And a different dimension.
You could have magic.
Exactly. Isn't that a Terry Pratchett thing?
It is Terry Pratchett. Well, there's somebody else that talks about magic quite often. And we'll do a podcast on Terry Pratchett in a different way, but there are two different types of magic in his. The magic of people and the magic of magic. So.
There you go. And there is definitely the magic of people.
Absolutely. Sometimes we see that and we enjoy it when we get entertained with them on television. So sit back, enjoy.
And watch me be geeky.
Two interviews in this one. They're both fairly short. But we have Barbara and we have Larry.
That's it. And with Larry, you'll hear what he later went on, and probably more people know him for, and that's being J.R. Ewing from Dallas.
From Dallas. So he's very well known. Stopped the world almost, who shot J.R.
The thing at the con was that you'd walk around and sometimes he had his Major Nelson hat on, and then about half an hour later he'd have his, you know, J.R. Ewing hat on, his big Stetson, and then you'd come back and he's got his Major Nelson hat back on. And I mean, he knew that he was there for a whole range of reasons to different fans at different eras and different ways that his characters have influenced those people.
And they were both absolutely lovely. Very nice people to talk to and very nice to interview. So I think we should let them get on with listening.
Okay.
Barbara, so many years on and people still love the show and love your character. What do you think why?
She's a big fan, by the way.
I'm a big fan of
this. Is when she heard the possibility of an interview, Barbara, it was like, so you're one of her favourites.
Now she knows.
So what's it like being an icon?
Oh my goodness, thank you. Thank you. I'm just really happy that people like the show and that it gives people joy. That's a very important thing to me. It makes me feel good. My toes curl up. I'm a little tired too.
It's been a long day.
Yeah, a long trip.
Now, you've just recently put out another book about your life. Would you like to explain a little bit about that and where maybe people can get it?
Well, it's the only book, the first book.
Oh, yes. Would you've done another one?
No.
Your IMDb is wrong then.
Yes. Other people may have written books, but this is the first time I have written a memoir. It's over here. It's HarperCollins is the publisher. It's called Barbara Eden, Genie Out of the Bottle, and it is a story of my life, my memoirs, how I got started in business, where I grew up. You know, it goes all the way through.
Was that cathartic?
No.
Is it hard to do?
Very difficult. Extremely difficult. It took me a long time to decide to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do it. And then I met Wendy Lee, who wrote it for me, and we talked, and she convinced me that she could do it well and that I would be happy with telling people everything. And she did a good job.
So it was a long process of reliving.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. And have people received it well, do you think?
I believe so, yes. It was, 6 or 8 weeks on the New York bestseller list. And I think it was on the bestseller list here in Australia also. I don't know how long it lasted on there, but it was there.
Well, congratulations on that. That's really an achievement.
Thank you.
Now, you had Lucille Ball as a bit of a mentor.
I did. I was very lucky.
Working with her, yes. What was she like?
She was a lovely lady. A lovely lady and talented, knew her stuff. And it was a pleasure to work with her.
And when you were on the scene of I Dream a Genie, I believe that you had become pregnant.
Oh, yes.
So was your job in jeopardy at that stage because it was so early on in the series?
No, it wasn't, although I didn't care. I was, as far as I was concerned, I wanted the baby more than I wanted the job.
Yeah.
but Sidney Sheldon was a lovely man, and he made it work. I'm very grateful to him.
It was quite controversial for its time because you were, you know, the costume was quite...
Really?
It's very sexy now. Look how many women walk around wearing, and men, you've seen a few.
Wearing
the costume.
That's true.
Yeah. You had already quite a career before you started.
Yes.
Certainly with Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea and being in huge film productions. What was the difference for you between being in films and then going on to television? Because I think at that stage it wasn't seen as, it was a drop down, wasn't it?
Have you started TV stuff?
It was eased up. It eased up by the time I did Genie. I had already done a television series for Fox. I was under contract at Fox. And they tried to start a fourth network at the time. And so I was in How to Marry a Millionaire, which was Marilyn Monroe's part of the movie.
Yep.
And it was just another it was work, you know, just another thing to do.
So why acting?
Why acting?
Yes.
Well, good question. I think because I could do it. I could do it. I was lucky. I found my niche.
Mm-hmm.
I knew. I was a singer, actually.
Yes.
In San Francisco. And I thought that would be my path, but it wasn't. I studied acting, and I realized that I really liked it. Liked it a lot.
You've actually done quite a few musicals early on in your career.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Not films. I never sang in a film. But on television, a lot on television. And I did a lot of stage productions singing. And I was here in Sydney, of course, at the Chevron Hotel with my Las Vegas act, yes.
So how long did you have your Las Vegas act?
Oh, gosh. I think I worked in Las Vegas for 8 to 10 years. When I was doing Genie, and when we'd take a break, I would rehearse and go to Vegas and do my act. And so all through the 80s, early 90s, I was working in Vegas. I guess more than 10 years. Yes.
So do you enjoy that? You obviously enjoy the audience participation and interaction with that?
Very much, very much, yes. And working with good, good musicians, you know.
Yes, coming.
Yes.
Just quickly, are you doing anything now, Barbara, other than being an author?
Let me think. What am I doing?
Other than
have
coming
no
here.
Idea. No, I'm going. I'm going to appear in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, in Toronto.
Is this your first convention, or have you done a few?
I have done two. I did Atlanta, and I did New Jersey.
So hopefully people...
Forgotten what they're called, but they're big shows. Yes.
So hopefully people will see you again around convention world.
Yes, I'll be here.
Thank
I'll
you.
Here.
Thank
you very much.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Rick.
And I'm Amy.
And we're the co-hosts of Take Him With You, a podcast that's like a reality TV show, but it's not.
Come get the juicy details of our life here at the Moyer household.
Including geeky technology updates.
Movie and TV reviews.
And a discussion on a life situation where you get to share on Facebook and Twitter through the impromptu question of the week.
Plus cool music.
Ladies, you have such a cool podcast. My wife talks about it all the time.
Yes, and I listen to every single one that you put out.
Sweet.
Very great podcast. I love your interviews at the different conventions.
Cool.
And if you're done listening to all of their great episodes on Women Talk Sci-Fi, you're welcome to come and visit our podcast at takehimwithyou.com.
Yeah, live long and prosper.
Yes.
Join us for the Take Him With You podcast, your weekly dose of reality in a good way.
Hopefully a good way.
Yeah, well, that's,
okay.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Welcome to Australia, Larry.
Thank you.
Did you realize when you started I Dream of Genie that 50 years later we'd still be, you know, loved by so many people around the world? And
I had
shown
no
on
idea whatsoever. I never thought it was going to last 46 years either. But here it is. And here I am in Australia.
Australia. And this is your second time in Australia?
Fourth or fifth.
Fourth or fifth.
Yeah, something like that.
Now, Bill was saying that during the show, you directed a lot of it, and sort of,
yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, I asked to do it, and they said, no, you can't, and I said, okay, get somebody else to play the part.
And he also said a lot of it was improv.
Oh, no, it was a scripted show, but a lot of the physical stuff was improv. You know, we added a lot of stuff to make it interesting, otherwise you're just talking heads, you know.
Yep.
Now, you're a bit of ahead of your time because NASA was still a fairly fledgling association, but did you have any help in getting the right aspect for NASA?
No. We were the fantasy part of NASA.
So they learned from you.
Yeah, I hope so. They're in trouble now because of funding and so forth, you know.
There is a bit of trouble with it, isn't
there? Oh, yeah. You're not going.
Do you think you've been an influence for some of the astronauts that have come into the program?
I really don't think so, my dear. They're wise enough not to know that Genie doesn't come with every astronaut.
Well, that would be good if she did.
Yeah.
Save all that hassle.
So how did you actually get into acting?
Well, my mother was a very famous actress, Mary Martin.
Yes.
She starred in South Pacific, the Broadway show, and then Sound of Music. She bought the book from Baroness von Trapp and took it to Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein and said, would you make a musical out of this? And they did, and she played it on Broadway for 4 years. And it became, although she didn't play the part of, Baroness von Trapp, Julie Andrews played that, but it became one of the most famous films ever.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the most iconic films.
Absolutely, and she produced it also with them.
Did she?
Yeah.
And that's how you got into acting?
Well, no, I got into acting because I went to live with my father in Texas, and I wanted to be a cowboy. Well, I never saw a horse, but I dug a lot of ditches, and I baled a lot of hay and worked as a farmhand and ranch hand. And I found out that the harder you work physically, the less money you make. So I called my mother after 2 summers of that and said, Mama, I think I want to become an actor. She said, well, get on a bus and come on up to New York and we'll see what we can do.
So did you start in the theater first then with your mother?
No. I started in the theater with a woman called Margot Jones in Dallas, the Theater in the Round. And then I worked in the summer stock. And I did musicals. I did probably 25 or 30 musicals. You'd rehearse in the daytime a musical and then perform another one at night. And that's how I got my training, right at the bottom. You know, did everything.
So was musical theater one of your
passions? Yeah, I was in the chorus and I danced and sang and put up the tent. I'd sleep in the latrine. I couldn't afford a place, so I bought a cot and a mosquito netting, and I would live after the show in the latrine.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I learned from the bottom up.
Right? You did, didn't you?
Working on the farm, at least you had a place to go sleep.
Yeah, exactly, my father's home, but not when I was working in the theater.
So is music something that you enjoy?
Yeah, sure. Very hard work, but I did about 50 musicals in my life.
And wow, that's not something you really know. Well, when you think of Larry Hagman, you think of J.R. Ewing. When you had the storyline of being shot, did you sort of realize that it was going to be a worldwide sensation?
Oh, no. Nobody knew that it was going to be as big as it was. I mean, it was iconic stuff, you know.
Yes.
And also it was a time where I could kind of negotiate for a higher salary, which I did. And I held out and I went to London for a month and lived there while we were negotiating. Then I went to, we got to the final stages of that. And I went to the Bahamas and stayed with a friend of mine for a couple of weeks there and did the final negotiation. Then finally they said, well, we'll make a deal if you can get here by noon tomorrow. Well, I had to charter a plane and fly to Texas, but it was well worth it.
Well worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, being JR in fantasy show by Dream of Genie are actors' dreams to be remembered.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Totally different kind of shows, you know.
Well, you stopped the world with JR, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it really was Stop the World.
Yeah. And they're both still running in foreign countries. Big in Europe, but still in Italy and France and Germany, London and Ireland, England, you know. Still over there.
So when did you start going to conventions and being part of that sort of
scene? About 5 years ago. It's a nice way to make some money and meet your fans, you know, and keep your name going. That's what you have to do as an actor.
Although Larry Hagman doesn't need to keep his name going.
I know, but you have to tap into the pulse of the fans and see where they are, you know. It's fun for me.
And it's nice to be appreciated, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. To be adored is wonderful.
It's wonderful. Absolutely.
Now, you've just recently, last year, was in Desperate Housewives.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So how was that working on that set?
Oh, it was just kind of fun to do. My granddaughters said, when I said they've contacted me, want me on, oh, Grandpa, you got to do that show. It's great. We watch it. Everybody watches it. So I did it because my granddaughters wanted me to do it.
And you had a wonderful death.
Oh, yeah. It was fun. Another bad guy. He was a lot worse than JR ever was.
He was, wasn't he?
Yeah,
a very
yeah.
nasty piece of work.
Frank. Yeah, Frank.
So what sort of things do you enjoy during your leisure time?
Oh, gosh, I have so many things. I have so many charities I do, you know. Certainly raising awareness for liver and transplants. She okay there, girl? Oh, transplantation is one of my major thing, the National Kidney Foundation I worked through in America.
That's right.
And I always get the word out there about people donating their organs, because there's 130,000 people waiting for a kidney or a liver or lungs or heart or any of that stuff. In America. Worldwide, you know, I don't know what it is.
Millions, I'm sure.
And people are reluctant to do that for some reason.
I mean, in these days of recycling, it's a really good way of saving the planet and saving people
you'd
at the same time.
You'd think they'd be educated towards that. You know?
Absolutely. I was very proud of my children when they, on their driver's license, good. They both did this.
You do that here too?
Yes,
right.
I do.
That's
I
great.
Do.
Yes, we do that.
Is there anything in the pipeline for you as far as acting's concerned?
Well, we're going to do Dallas again. I just finished the pilot, and the emphasis is going to be on the children, Bobby's son and my son and their girlfriends and wives.
So you're going to take over your father's basic role?
I hope so. Not a hell of a lot to do. I wouldn't
amazing.
Mind doing it when I'm 90. I'll be 80 in September. I wouldn't mind being, you know, doing this show for another 10 years.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for speaking
thanks.
With us today.
Thank you.
It's great to see you in Australia again.
Yep. And all the best for Dallas.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Hello, this is Claire Kramer, and I played Babette Storm in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And you're listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
Well, Eugenie, I think we should thank Daniel and Lionel, in particular from Supernova Expo. And you should check them out if you're in Australia or if you're coming here for a holiday. You never know, you might have a con and get to see one here. And the address is?
www.supernovaexpo.com.au.
And super is spelled S-U-P-A.
That's correct. We'll have a link on our podcast notes. So if you don't get to write it down as we're talking, go back to our website and you'll find the link there.
Many times. Many times.
Yes, and to all our promoters. So they're there.
So thank you all, both promoters and guests. And we hope you enjoyed. And you come back next time and we'll have some more exciting podcasts.
That's it, because that was a double barrel interview.
Mm-hmm.
Beauty.
You have to come back anyway if you like I Dream of Jeannie, because we have Bill Daly at a later time.
That's right.
So bye, Eugenia.
Bye, Jerry.
Sci-fi. 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 Sci-fi.